From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
For the week of October 17, 2005, this is the Disc Golf News. I'm Brian Sullivan. Thanks for joining us. And man, what a weekend it was. As you probably know by now, David Feldberg of Oregon is the new national disc golf champion.
And I said, Ken, you got to give it to me. What do I got to do to win this one? I've been here so many times. And he goes, if you come out of the gate hot, you'll have a good chance of winning this tournament.
Only the third man to ever claim that title. We'll talk with him this week. He will tell us the tale of his victory in Rock Hill. Plus, Kevin McCoy has some helpful advice, especially for AMs looking to make that jump to the pro ranks. That's coming up in the 60-second clinic. And there's a preview of this weekend's big event, the Texas State Championships in Houston. Plus, of course, as always, we'll run down a bunch of other PDGA events this weekend, a whole bunch more. It's all coming up on this edition of PDGA Radio News, brought to you by GottaGoGottaThrow.com, discovering the world at DTWorld.com, Discraft at Discraft.com, and Innova Champion Discs at InnovaDiscs.com.
The Champion Sidewinder from Innova is the latest addition to the state-of-the-art Champion line. The Sidewinder is designed for long turnover shots and long-distance rollers. The extra long glide will add D to your drive no matter how big your arm is. And the Sidewinder is made with Champion Line plastic so it holds up round after round. Your game just got better with a new Sidewinder from Innova, number one in disc golf.
There were very few weenie arms at this one. It was the U.S. Disc Golf Championship in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Here we go. Tough disc golf, lots of OB, par 68. We begin at day two. Chris Sprague of Iowa cards a bogey-free 11 under par. He's got the lead temporarily, but would give it away later. Sprague's got world champ Nate Doss and a bunch of others close by. Day three, scores are going up for nearly everyone except Oregon's David Feldberg, who throws his best round of the tournament with a 10 under 58. And here comes Wisconsin's Barry Schultz, along with the lefty from Michigan, Scott Martin. Both are steady, both are well under par, and Martin would lead by one over Feldberg going into the final round. But his luck would not hold out. He would stumble on the front nine, and Feldberg with a big lead until he takes a double circle eight on 13. That would open the door for Schultz, but Barry, who had already missed a casual two-foot putt on five, would proceed to four putt on the dreaded clown's mouth. And by 18, it was all over. And the leaderboard would report a three-way tie for sixth between Ken Climo, Nate Goss, and Chris Sprague. Brian Schweberger of North Carolina in fifth. Barry Schultz ties with Kevin McCoy of Tulsa for third. Scott Martin is second. And your new U.S. National Disc Golf Champion is Oregon's David Feldberg, who takes home $11,000 and becomes only the third man to ever claim that title. Time now for the 60-second clinic. Have you ever thrown, say, a double bogey, and you just couldn't shake it? You know, three or four holes later, you're thinking, oh, now why didn't I just blah, blah, blah? Yeah, well, you're not alone. In the clinic this week, Kevin McCoy is with us and has some advice when you find yourself in that situation.
For an advanced player to get to the next level, the thing that I see them having problems with the most is what I'm having problems with right now, mental game. It's not the end of the world if you get a bogey, you know. It's getting a bogey or getting a five, it's part of the game. And I noticed that me personally lately and a lot of AMs will take it really hard when they make a bogey on a hole maybe they should be birdieing or even a par, and they let it linger for too many holes. They let it think about it for two, three holes, and it's not doing any good to keep thinking about what the past was, because the past is past, just that. You got to focus on the hole ahead of you, the shot ahead of you. And if you can just have real short memory, you know, about your negatives, then you should have good results.
Kevin McCoy of Tulsa finished in third place last week at the United States Disc Golf Championship. And you're listening to PDGA Radio News.
Since 1979, Discraft has designed and manufactured tournament-quality flying discs for all disc sports. Our disc golf line is second to none. From beginners to world champion pros, disc golfers everywhere rely on the quality, consistency, and durability of every Discraft Pro Golf disc. Discraft, the world leader in disc sports.
Try the new Venom Maximum Distance Driver and the Drone in overstable mid-range and the new Pro D Plastic for superior grip even when wet from Discraft.
Hi, this is Scott Martin, and you're listening to PDGA Radio News.
In the big picture, David Feldberg. He's been on the show a couple of times this year. He's also been helping us out on occasion with the 60-Second Clinic. Now, we get to talk to him as the new U.S. National Disc Golf Champion. He's only the third player to ever win that title. He took it this weekend in Rock Hill, South Carolina. So now David Feldberg has got the trophy. He's got the ring. He's got the $11,000. We began the conversation with a question from me. I wanted to know how he had done at USDGC in previous years.
I think my best finish is a 26th place, and I've been somewhere between 26th and 35th every year, except for my first year where I think Avery and I tied for 51st. So it's been a tournament I haven't done too well in. I've always been real close to doing well, but I always couldn't hold together on those tricky holes.
So let's start with Wednesday, day one of competition. How'd your day begin?
I got a great tee time. I teed up one group before noon, which was Ken's group at noon, the featured group. And it was a good time because it was kind of rainy in the morning, but it cleared up. You know, it came out kind of shaky, to tell you the truth. I overdrove the first hole and missed the putt. And then I went on to miss birdie putts on 3, 4, 5, and 7 from inside the circle, which, you know, is not the kind of start you want to have. I took a double bogey on the Coliseum hole. I didn't make it into the safe zone. And I dropped a 1-under with only like 4 to play. I got together and birdied 17 and 18 to get to 3-under, which was a decent score, I think about 17th place.
So, first day jitters or what?
I think it was. I put a lot of pressure on myself with having to beat Ken and Barry for the National Series and wanted to do good here because I've been playing so well. I wanted to prove to people that I could play at the Open, which I've never been able to do.
So day one, you finished with a 65, and going into day two, Thursday, did you have any particular goals, or what were you thinking?
Well, what I was thinking was that some other great players had shot 65 that day, and in my group was going to be Ken Climo and Steve Rico. I think our fourth was Kirk Yeo, and he's fun to play with. So I knew that we'd have a really good group and we'd have a good following at the tournament. And so I was kind of excited to play in that group, even though I only shot 3-under.
You were 6 strokes better on Thursday than you were on Wednesday. Was putting the big difference?
It was putting. I made most of the inside circle putts, except for one, I think. And I just kept my head in it and didn't realize that I was doing so well. I was just, you know, playing the course. And, you know, next thing you know, you're 10-under. With one, you know, or 9-under with one to play. I just laid up. I could have probably shot 58 that round, but I laid up 25, 30 feet on the last hole just to guarantee a 59.
Chris Sprague of Iowa really turned it on Thursday. He shot a bogey-free 11-under for a 57. He was leading at that point. What was the buzz around him?
I think that people were impressed with his scoring because he had shot 60, 57, which is really good. And I really didn't talk to him much that night, but I heard he was feeling a little nervous, and it's a lot of pressure when you never led a major and you're leading a major by a couple strokes over the world's best players. You know, I've done that before and blown the lead, so I had a feeling what that was like, but I think this is his first taste of it.
On Friday, you improved your Thursday score by 1 stroke. You shot a 58. What was the difference there?
I played pretty much the same shot. And it was almost the exact same round. It was evenly spaced, you know, instead of being the first day, I think I shot 5-under in the front, 4-under in the back. And then the next day I shot like 5-under on the front, 5-under on the back. And I think I only had one bogey in those 2 rounds combined. And so I just played pretty consistent.
At that point, Scott Martin looked to be headed toward a possible victory. He had a 60, a 60. Then on Friday, he shot a 61.
Well, everybody was talking, you know, like they always do, about how it's a very lefty-friendly course. And it's probably the most lefty-friendly course of all major tournaments. Because most of the OB, or a lot of it, I guess, plays away from the lefty, and we play into it. And they were telling me I was going to have my work cut out for me to beat him, and everybody was talking and all this stuff. And I woke up the next morning and I was warming up, and Ken was there. And I said, Ken, you got to give it to me. What do I got to do to win this one? I've been here so many times. Help me out, you know. And he didn't really say much. And then about 3-4 minutes later, he comes walking over to me. And he goes, I got it. And he goes, if you come out of the gates hot, you'll have a good chance to win this tournament because you need to get a good lead on him before the lefty holes show up because in the middle of the course is really lefty. And they're really difficult holes. And so that's what I did. I came out, and I got 6 of the first 9. And Scott, he played not his best. I don't know if it was my game or the pressure or what it was, but he wasn't the Scott Martin of the first 3 rounds.
And then there's Barry Schultz, who was also right there with you on Saturday. He's a guy you have gone up against many times. Did you have a strategy to defend him off, or was he responsible for his own undoing?
Well, I kind of came out and tried a new strategy. I just didn't want to know any of the scores. I didn't look at any of the boards. And I just said, hey, play hole by hole. If I score my best and do my best on every single hole, then I feel like I can beat him. Because most of the times in those situations, a lot of the times, I beat myself when he beat me. And I didn't want that to be the case this time. But I didn't pay attention to it. And I got going. And we got to the 12th hole, and all of a sudden I'm leading by 4. I saw the board for the first time. And I was like, you know, I kind of thought about it. I was like, wow, I didn't realize I had a big lead on everybody. I thought I was playing well, but I just wasn't keeping score. And he makes an eagle on the 12th hole to cut it to 3. I birdied, he eagled. We came up to the 888 hole, the famous 888.
That's hole 13.
Yep, hole 13. And I made the classic mistake of throwing the tee shot a little low, and it caught the curb. And I had to pretty much re-tee. I got to walk up like 40 feet, 30 feet, whatever it was. And then I threw that, and it went across left. OB. No, I'm OB twice, and he's on a perfect drive. And so it's looking like he's going to take 3 strokes off me on the hole, which he does. I take my shot goes up to the basket, looks good, and goes right across the basket. I think I caught part of the basket and rolled OB. No, I'm putting for the 8, and he's putting for a 5. We both made our putts, and he tied me up with 5 holes to play.
And then you came to the clown's mouth.
Yeah, we were still tied. And I've made it all 3 times, even though I practiced laying up. I just had felt it every time and made it cleanly. And he got up there and had the tee, and I knew that was going to be an advantage. Because, you know, if he had missed it, then I would have less pressure. Or if he makes it, maybe I lay up and guarantee that I'll lose 2 strokes, maybe only 1, you know. But a good advantage that he went first, I thought. And he hit the tree on the right and kicked through it, but only about 5 feet through, 10 feet through. And I threw it, and the first time I threw it too high, I hit the center sign across the top, and it bounced backwards and left. And I pulled out my Todd Branch tribute disc, which I used like once in the tournament, which is like his first rhino he ever had on tour, that he gave me when he left. And I threw a 2-finger roller that got out through the Mando about 60 feet, and I threw it from there all the way to the basket. And it kind of nestled right behind the basket. I didn't realize it was that close, but it was a really, you know, only about 15, 20 feet. And so Barry had laid up his second shot so he could throw across and get the 4. He threw it and left it wide, like 35, 40 feet, I think it was. And now I'm under the basket, and he has to make the 35-footer. The tide's turned, all of a sudden he was going to have to lay up for a stroke lead. Now he's got to make a 40-footer at the side of the fastest green in the tournament to win, you know, or to stay tied to have a chance to win. And he went for it. And he missed it. And if you miss that basket, it's going down the hill. I mean, almost all your approaches that look like they're right there roll down the hill. He went down the hill about 34 feet, I'd say, 35 feet, and he tried to make it, and he left it kind of high and hit the top of the basket and rolled down to right next to him, about 3 feet closer. And then these were tough putts. It wasn't like, I mean, I wouldn't have had a lot of pressure trying to make these uphill putts. I mean, they were tough, and he missed that one, and then he dropped in for a 7. Then I went up and made my 20-footer for the 4, and took my 3 strokes right back.
Tell me about 18. Let's talk about the score at that point. Let me hear about what was going through your mind, and tell me about the crowd and how you were feeling as you finally put that last putt in.
Well, he missed the hay bales on 17, and that took a lot of pressure off me. So I had a 3-stroke lead over Scott Martin and a 4-stroke lead over him at that point. Because Scott Martin had birdied the 17th to take the lead over Barry. And Guru walked up beside me, and I said, "Hey, is anybody in the clubhouse lower than 28 under?" And he said, "No, I think the best is 26 under." And I said, "Well, as long as I par, I can't lose." And he said, "You're right, Mr. Velberg." Even that's how he talks, you know. And instead of going just laying up like you would maybe just to be extra safe, I thought it'd be a lot easier if I just threw my shot. You know, I've thrown it all three times in the right spot. Why am I going to change what I did to get there? So I threw it, and I threw it the best I ever threw it all weekend, and it was perfect all the way up the right side and landed in, like, the perfect zone to get a birdie. And just like the two previous rounds, I had great rounds going, and instead of trying to throw it in there and take the birdie, I just threw it straight and left myself, like, 25 feet from the basket looking down at it. And as I was walking up, everybody's pointing at me, and they're all like, "Borg, Borg," you know, that's what they like to call me now. And a lot of my friends, I could see their faces. It was almost like disbelief, like, he's really doing it. Felber's going to win the Open, you know. And I got up there, and I took the putter, and I put it upside down. And I just slid it on its back down the hill, and it was about 2 feet. And they putted out, and I dropped it in for the two-stroke win. Everybody just came rushing down and giving me hugs. And I now realize what Barry and Nate and all those guys are talking about. I mean, it feels great, but when they come in there, you're getting they're hugging you so strong, you're getting elbowed in the head, and it's funny. It's like I almost didn't know where I was for a second. But it was a great feeling. Not having to make a putt or anything, I just playing golf the way it's supposed to be played, laying up and taking a par for the win. That was great.
Well, David Fallenberg, congratulations on this huge victory and being only the third man to claim title as the U.S. Disc Golf Champion.
Thank you, Brian. And I'd just like to tell anybody out there that thanks for all the support over the years. Every little thing that they've done for us when we were on tour or in sponsorship in any way, it's greatly appreciated, and that was the road that led me here. Without them, I'd still be hitchhiking. So thanks a lot, everyone.
We spoke with the new national disc golf champion, David Fallenberg, at his home in Portland, Oregon, on Monday. And you're listening to PDGA Radio News. Discovering the World has long been the leader in mail-order disc services, with the largest selection of professional and recreational flying disc products, plus PDGA merchandise. Discovering the World is a great place to find the disc you need for the sport you love. Online orders ship within 24 hours, and the new retail location is open 7 days a week to handle all your flying disc needs. Call 714-522-2202 or visit dtworld.com. Discovering the World. Pros and AMs alike will be headed to Houston, Texas this weekend for the Texas State Championships. The tournament director is John Gimp Edwards.
This is actually our 10th year, and we're pretty excited about it. The founders of the event started it back when it was just on two courses, and now we've got it up to three. I believe it started out as a C or B tier in the early days, and we moved up to Super Tour status very quickly. And next year, we're moving from A tier to National Tour status for the first time because Waco is not going to be a National Tour next year. Very excited about that, and the event's moving to the spring of 2006, April 22nd and 23rd. So be sure to put that on your calendar. That's right between two other Super Tours, and we think some of the big dogs are going to come back down again for that one next year. We had three very challenging, long, and technical courses. And we actually put in the third course during this tournament each year. It's the only time you can play it. It's the turning course, and it's considered to be one of the few courses that a golfer has shot a perfect round on. Ken Climo, during the 2002 Worlds, shot a perfect round on the turning course. I believe that was an 11 or 12 down. And it will give you a challenge that you can see nowhere else during a two-day tournament. Typically, our courses are considered to be long and difficult. There can be wind, but it's not like Round Rock where there's always wind. We're very excited about everybody coming in again this year. We look forward to the spring of 2006 when things are going to be bigger and better, and we hope you have a great time.
We've been talking with Gimp Edwards about this weekend's Texas State Championships in Houston. Just what the heck is going on this weekend, October 22nd and 23rd? I'm here to tell you. In Belgium, yeah, that's in Europe, get out your map. It's the Citadel Open there. In Florida, the Orlando Open. And in Japan, the 10th Kanto Open.
If you're looking for an Alabama getaway, get yourself to Huntsville for the 31st Alabama State Championships. Grand Ledge, Michigan is hosting the CCR Doubles this weekend. That's the Harvest Doubles, Pros in Advance on Saturday, AMS and Mixed on Sunday. The Down East Players Cup in Greenville, North Carolina, or the Freeman Lake Open in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. The Great Blue Heron Open is going down in Norwalk, Ohio. That's a Katrina relief event. The Minneapolis Open in Minnesota. In Ventura, California, it's the Ventura Open. And in Fall Branch, Tennessee, the 19th Cross-State Doubles. Plus, Mishawaka, the Princess City Open. Full list anytime. Well, when the serve is up, PDGA.com. At GottaGoGottaThrow.com, you'll find the largest selections at the lowest prices. They carry all your favorite brands of golf discs, bags, and baskets. No matter what you're looking for, you'll find the largest selection of everything for disc golf. And they can do custom discs and mini markers for your club or help promote your next tournament. Check out the online pro shop at GottaGoGottaThrow.com. The leader in high-performance disc golf equipment and merchandise is GottaGoGottaThrow. And finally, some more fun facts to know and tell about the USDGC and what went down there. We will begin with the cup. No, I'm not talking about the trophy, but Steve Weiss Cup of California. At age 50, the guy shot a 57 in round two. That's 11 under par. Way to go, Cup. He would finish in 36th place. And Marcus Karlström of Sweden has a new course record on the gold course at Winthrop University. He shot a 56. That's 12 under. He did that on the final day of competition, and congratulations to him. And since we have not yet gotten around to mentioning this about Mr. Feldberg, your new national champ, well, with that win, he also becomes the 2005 PDGA Tour champion as well. He would sneak past Barry Schultz, who takes second place. Kenny Climo takes third in the race for PDGA Tour champion for 2005. And that, my friends, is the disc golf news for the week of October 17th. For the PDGA, I'm Brian Sullivan. Thanks to our sponsors this week, GottaGoGottaThrow.com, Discovering the World, Discraft, and Innovate Champion Disc. And until next week, I hope you will get out there, enjoy the autumnal weather, stay out of the shul, and keep them in the fairways.